You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Turns out, my sensei doesn't know everything. The heavy burden of apparent omniscience, the advantages of Bayesian analysis, and the wisdom of updating your curriculum. As most of you know, I'm a martial arts instructor who owns and operates a commercial martial arts academy. A big part of my business model relies on the image that I and the academy project to the public. A typical, and I think toxic, image that many martial arts teachers present to the public is that of the all-knowing, all-wise master. There is still a tendency among some folks to think of the martial arts, or at least the kinds of martial arts they think they like, as if they were some form of magic, affected by arcane forces greater than just you, the individual artist. Or at least that martial arts have some sort of magical properties. They tend to think of martial artists in the same vein as they think of psychics, astrologers, and purveyors of homeopathic remedies. That is, they tend to put them in the category of practitioners of, quote, ancient wisdom, unquote. Those words, ancient wisdom, should always be a red flag to anyone pursuing critical thinking skills. They imply that we were better people and knew more, centuries and even millennia ago, than we are and know now, except for a few masters among us who are in touch with this ancient wisdom. As a matter of fact, people who purport to practice and teach ancient wisdom frequently operate in a way that makes you think they have an answer for your every question, magic for your every need. There is nothing new for them to learn. They're masters of the ancient secrets, and all you have to do is show them sufficient reverence or pay them enough. There's no need for them to update what their view of the world is. Also, humans are drawn to follow charismatic leaders, so it's understandable that many martial arts customers are drawn to teachers who present this type of all-knowing facade to the public, especially those customers who fail to do their research. This leaves them, as customers, in a vulnerable position, easy prey for martial con artists. Many martial arts instructors, once they reach instructor status, are loath to admit that there is anything left for them to learn. That, by definition, would directly clash with the image of being all-knowing. This is frequently reflected in the curriculum of these instructors, and I mean by that, that their curriculum never changes. I've even had martial arts instructors like the ones I'm describing come to my academy and take lessons from me, usually on the down low, and then express satisfaction with what they've learned, but sadness that they, quote, cannot teach it to their students, unquote. When I ask them why not, they say, well, because it's not X, with X being the name of the martial art that their academy offers. To me, an evolved, modern martial arts program must be periodically updated as the instructor learns new techniques, drills, and concepts through continuing education. Updated either by adding new courses with new schedules at the academy or by inserting new elements into the old curriculum. Let's shift to the world of science for a look at the same phenomenon. Many people express frustration with science when they hear about new discoveries or new research through the news media. These discoveries are often announced at a dizzying rate and are sometimes directly contradictory to earlier scientific paradigms. The frustration people feel with not knowing what to know or what to believe is partly the result of poor journalism when reporting on science, partly the result of scientific illiteracy by many in the general public, and partly the result of the poor communication skills of many scientists to the journalists and the general public. These poor communication skills are not an uncommon trait among geeks and nerds like me. But the biggest source of frustration with science for many is that our quirky human brain wants all the answers right now. That is the primary reason for the success of ancient wisdom versus doubt and inquiry. We are all, if not careful, quicker to accept a doctrine that purports to know all than one that tries to expand knowledge. Fortunately for all of us, science doesn't care whether you agree with it or not, and it also doesn't care if its progress is too fast for you and me to absorb. One of the greatest advances in scientific thought was to develop the idea of a working model for whatever part of the world is being studied. By definition, a working model means you're admitting up front that you don't know all the answers. Unlike purveyors of ancient wisdom, scientists, at least good scientists, are happy to profess a certain degree of ignorance. That means there's a lot of cool stuff to learn. Curiosity is a strength. This sensible but often brave act of admitting ignorance, instead of causing us to throw up our hands and admit defeat, induces us to construct working models of how we think the natural world works based on what we do understand, and use that as a basis for further research. As the research progresses and more knowledge is gained, the working model is either rejected outright or, more likely, is refined and updated. Again, unlike in the world of ancient wisdom. I can't make this point strongly enough. Up until only the last several centuries, it was dangerous, if not life-threatening, to write down on paper or to publicly proclaim that we do not already know everything we need to know about the universe. The power of the various kinds of ancient wisdom among the various cultures was vast and unforgiving to any new way of conceptualizing the world. The bravery of early scientists should not be underestimated. But their curiosity was more powerful than their fear, which I think is a fitting and honorable epitaph for them all. While again it's true that we don't and never will know or understand everything, this working model method has taken us from the caves to the stars. Part of this work is developing better and better methods for analyzing data and making predictions based on probability. One of the earliest pioneers of this type of work was an 18th century Englishman named Thomas Bayes. He did groundbreaking work in the field of probability and developed mathematical algorithms for assessing the level of confidence in a body of evidence. This little-known 18th century British statistician is one of the most important figures in the advancement of modern thought. If you ever hear the expression Bayesian analysis, Thomas Bayes is the man to which this refers. I'm not going to go into the math of Bayesian analysis. You're welcome. But suffice it to say that it enables us to confidently and mathematically assess evidence and thus either upgrade or downgrade our degree of comfort with our working model. The development of high-speed computation in the information age has only made Bayesian analysis vastly more powerful. Now let's touch on how this concept of updating your worldview might affect the martial arts by going back in time about 50 years to Bruce Lee's Chinatown gym in Los Angeles, where Mr. Lee and his right-hand man, Dan Inosanto, instructed students in the curriculum of Junfan Gung Fu. This curriculum was the working model for how Mr. Lee and Mr. Inosanto saw the current state of the art of martial arts training. Now, using the working model idea was not as dangerous for martial artists in the 1960s as it had been for scientists in the 16th century. But it still took a pair of big brass balls, as well as a generous dose of talent, to defy the martial arts establishment. I don't mean to imply that Bruce Lee was the first or only martial artist who defied tradition. No, what made him unique was a coincidental convergence of a number of factors. The first was his own amazing ability combined with his iconoclastic approach to the martial arts. The second was his unprecedented, at least in the West, celebrity status as a martial arts action film star. The third was the existence of the martial arts media, consisting mostly of magazines at this point, which was only a bit more than a decade old. This nascent martial arts media scene, which Bruce Lee's success caused to grow quite a bit in circulation, in turn gave Bruce Lee a platform from which he loudly and proudly proclaimed his defiance of martial tradition and his rejection of many of its methods. In addition to being unafraid of the old masters, who were the martial arts equivalents of purveyors of ancient wisdom, and to being a gifted action movie star, Bruce Lee was a bit of a mad genius when it came to brainstorming about new areas of martial arts research and instruction for both himself, Dan Inosanto, and their students. As a matter of fact, the Chinatown Academy, formerly called the Junfan Gung Fu Institute, was, like a good university should be, a facility for both education and for research. Dan Inosanto was the calming, organizing influence. He made sure the students worked hard to develop solid basic skills and worked on organizing Bruce Lee's new ideas to present to the students. Bruce Lee would frequently learn some new technique or idea and suddenly inflict it on his shocked students, who sometimes were only barely adjusted to the last alteration to the curriculum he had made as a result of a discovery. He never seemed to worry that the students might be upset that he didn't already know everything about the martial arts. He was much too busy researching and having a lot of fun trying to modernize the martial arts. While some people may not care for this approach, I find it refreshing. Many instructors would never change their curriculum for fear of appearing to not already know everything at a magically perfect level. To me, this desire to present a facade of total martial knowledge is the result of either fear of embarrassment or naive magical thinking. But martial arts instructors are not the only people who cause problems when it comes to updating curricula. Some students can be a problem as well. A subset of students prefers an instructor who never updates his or her curriculum, because that might disrupt their quest to earn rank. This is a case where I think that placing too much emphasis on ranking in the martial arts can be toxic. Damn it, I spent 3 months learning the unicorn kick so that I could earn my pink belt. And here Sifu Stolpnagel has changed the requirements and dropped that kick from the curriculum. I'm going to go across town and train at the Temple of the Golden Dragon where it's easier to earn belts. We who are interested in the martial arts should appreciate an academy and an instructor who regularly assesses his confidence in his program and updates it accordingly. Those who await a metaphysically perfect truth instead of a functional working model before acting, making the perfect the enemy of the good, will remain behind in the caves of our ancestors. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about The Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.